From KCUR, I'm Steven Steigman in for Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. Thanksgiving means turkey, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie, all the carbs you could want. Although we've all got our tried and true favorites, you won't ruffle too many feathers if you try a couple of new dishes this year. Well, for a few ideas or maybe a word or two of basting advice, Room 39's Ted Habiger is with us this hour to help you add some flavor. And if your turkey's not the only thing that needs a little sauce, wine expert Doug Frost has you covered with suggestions for your Thanksgiving libations. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Turkey's in the oven, just a few more minutes before I take it out. Okay, garlic mashed potatoes, check. Sweet potatoes in the dish, ready. Yep, enough spoons for soup and dessert. Rolls, check. Plates, bowls, glasses, water glasses, wine glasses, wine glasses. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Wine. Who's bringing the wine? Wait. Who's that coming up the driveway?
Yeah,
okay. Oh, did I look up? It's Doug Frost. That man has a wine cellar the size of a football field, and he's carrying a box. Welcome to a pre-edition holiday, pre-holiday edition of Up to Date. I'm your very fortunate fill-in host, Steven Steigman, and as you guessed it, it's time to talk about wine for Thanksgiving. Doug Frost is one of three people in the world who holds and embraces the dual designation of Master of Wine and Master Sommelier. Doug, nice to have you back again.
It's great to be back.
And also back with us again this morning is Chef Ted Habiger of Room 39 with two locations, 39th Street in Kansas City and Mission Farms in Leawood. Ted also walked in this morning with a big box containing gorgeous-looking and intoxicating-smelling food. He's going to help us pair food and wine. Ted, welcome back.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'm guessing most people don't forget the wine for Thanksgiving dinner, but I'm also guessing, Doug, that many people overthink their wine selections.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really important to remember that the issue is not finding the so-called right wine to go with the food. The issue is finding the right wine to go with your people. In other words, just serve them what they like.
Well, I think that's good advice, but here's a good one. Is it wrong of me? Oftentimes, if I'm hosting a dinner, somebody brings wine with them. For Thanksgiving, I kind of want to, control. So I'm not a control freak, but is it wrong to ask your guests to bring something beyond red or white?
Well,
I mean, is that rude?
No, I guess it's not. Although, I'm thinking control freak. No, just kidding. Sorry. No, it's just that I think the only thing that I ever ask people to do is bring something. If they're going to bring something that they really like to drink. Now, you're quite as you can imagine. People usually do the, I'm not bringing anything to drink over to your place. And
why?
Well, because there is this sense of intimidation by some people. And I think that's crazy. Mm-hmm. But, it nonetheless is a human response. But the smarter folks, it's because you got some good stuff to drink over there. And if I don't bring anything, you'll have to pop your own stuff.
Well, that's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, I would be intimidated to bring over wine to your house, I think.
Well, I think that's crazy ultimately because there are tens of thousands of wines released into the U.S. market every year. I do try to drink a lot, mm-hmm. Even though that doesn't sound – that's probably not good phrasing. But I do.
I try to drink a lot, period.
I like to drink a lot of them and taste them. But, I try to taste them and I try to figure out what I can, but I'm lucky if I taste 5% of them.
Well, you had an article in Sunday's Kansas City Star special Thanksgiving food section, and here's a quote. There are classic wine and food matches that are reputed to elevate the meal to some glorious – ethereal experience. Oh, yes, Mr. Frost, tell me about these ethereal experiences.
Well, there was perhaps some sense of cynicism in that, but it's true that there are moments that one has had, say, foie gras and Sauternes, one of the classic matches, this incredibly fatty liver thing that, if it's not overcooked, has crazy and amazing richness. And then you put it with this sweet Bordeaux that's been aged in oak, sweet wine aged in oak, with, you know, fairly robust alcohol, and God only knows why all those things work together, but they start to sing, and new flavors are created as the two are put together. The same could be said of vodka and oysters, you know, or for some people, you know, stout and oysters. Mm-hmm. So there are all sorts of experiences that for individuals become really magical, but I will always argue that it's really more the people, it's the company, mm-hmm. it's the moment, rather than saying, well, it's lamb, so you must have Bordeaux because this is what's classic.
Well, tell me, I'm guessing that in your career, you have had a moment or two of a pairing. Both of you have had a moment or two where you've had food and wine and you put it together and you say, aha. Can you tell me about an instance where this happened and what you were eating and what you were drinking? Do you remember, Ted?
Sure, sure. I mean, there's things that I've had, maybe five or six of the same bottle, same vintage, everything, you know, and had them at different times with different people, and they've tasted different. And not only is the product going to be slightly different in the bottle, but the situation's different. And there was one time where I was at a good friend, Andrew and Rachel's house, and we were having hamburgers in their backyard, and I opened up a bottle of just a Bourguignon Rouge from Rene Leclerc, and it was from a great year, but it was also one of the most amazing tasting wines. And for us, just a simple Bourguignon Rouge, which is maybe $15 retail mm-hmm. or something, and it was this, I don't know, the charredness of the hamburger with this really acidic, beautiful Pinot Noir just worked perfectly, which
good.
It really shouldn't, you know. It doesn't seem like a hamburger and Pinot Noir would
match. Well, how much
match.
Had you had to drink before this wine?
Very little, okay, amazingly so enough. It was really one of the and we both kind of like took a sip out of the wine and looked at each other and we're like, oh, my God, this is really good.
It sounds really cool.
Well, Doug, tell me about an experience you had where you had a bite of food, you took a sip of wine, or maybe the reverse order, and you had that aha moment.
I certainly remember a number of them, but one always sticks out, which is I'd been ill. I'd had food poisoning. I'm in France, and so I haven't eaten anything in 3 days, and I'm like, what in heaven's name am I going to put in my stomach? Because I need to eat. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the Rhone Valley, and I had a omelette aux truffes, omelette, you know, just egg with black truffles. I thought
sounds horrible.
You see, funny, I thought you were going to say you went into a Quick Trip and you got a sandwich.
Yeah, no, it's I'm in the wrong.
Probably was.
And so I got a rosé. I got a dry rosé, a Tavel rosé to go with that. And the restaurant that I'd chosen is filled with, you know, Galois smoking, you know, Pernod slurping Frenchmen being noisy. And I thought, I got to get out of here. And I went out onto the patio, and it's kind of cold, but I had my coat on. And I had this Tavel, and I had this omelette aux truffes, and I actually had a copy of Crime and Punishment with me. And I'm looking out over the Rhone Valley because this deck looks out over the Rhone Valley. And I thought, this is just perfection. It was a remarkable experience for me. And I still to this day, when people talk about egg dishes, I'm immediately like, look, let's talk rosé, because you're going to have the weight of a red wine without the tannin of a red wine. And that's what you need in order to make eggs work. And it all comes – it all originates in that particular moment.
So have you tried to recreate that experience?
Well, yeah. I've done it a few times. I keep missing out on the Rhone Valley part.
Yeah.
But I'm also missing out on the Galois smoking, you know, Frenchman too. So maybe it works.
Well, you say you said it's really not so much about the food and drink, but the company. And, you know, hosts have so many pressures for that does sound like wine, by the way. Hosts have so many pressures for dinner. The you know, food, the table, entertaining guests. This shouldn't be a big decision. But let's get into the science here. In fact, and then after that, I want to do a little tasting here. Let's get into the science. Roast turkey, what wine goes well with poultry? And does some of that depend on how the bird is prepared?
Well, I first have to say that turkey, you know, certainly is not a particularly powerful or flavorful meat. It's, you know, unless you get into the dark meat, there's not a heck of a lot going on there. So it's really all the other stuff that makes the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm.
Dressing can be sweet. It can be fatty. It can be all sorts of things. Certainly cranberry sauce is famously sweet and tangy at the same time. You know, the sweet potatoes, do they have the marshmallows on top? You know, the green beans, do they have the fried, you know, onions?
I'm going to ask Ted about that a little bit later.
Yeah. You know, there's all these other things going on. So there isn't one thing at all that pertains. Instead, what I do tell people to do nonetheless is starting with bubbly, like we're doing right here. We're starting with some bubbly.
Tell us about this wine.
Well, this is good old Jordan J. J is a sparkling wine. I say Jordan because it's the Jordan family, but now it's J Vineyards, and they make this Sonoma Sparkler that I think is delicious. And right now it's being really racy and tangy and fun to drink and wetting the palate. You know, what happens with something tart? And when you think about the things that we begin a meal with, we begin things typically with tart things. And the reason is, or the thinking is behind this, is that tartness, you know, it has citric. Let's say in this case, why do you pucker when you bite into a lemon? You pucker because the lemon has citric acid. And the citric acid wants moisture, and the moisture is in your mouth. So literally the lemon is drawing your mouth towards the lemon, you know, like this, you know. And so your mouth is then empty of saliva, you know, of moisture. So then the brain goes, well, I better make him salivate. You know, he's trying to talk to people on the radio. So I start salivating, and then the brain goes.
You just described exactly what happened to me when I drank
exactly.
that wine.
And then the next thing, the scary thing, the next thing that will happen is the brain's going to go, well, he's salivating. Maybe there's food here somewhere. And so you're in about 3 minutes, your stomach's going to go, you know, like this, because the gastric juices will start going.
Tricky devil.
I know. And this is why we have tart things at the beginning of a meal, like sparkling wine or dry white wine or, you know, champagne or Campari and soda or whatever it is, because it gets, you know, the juices flowing, as we will say. But literally it makes you hungry.
Well, let's give our rankings on this wine. Joining us in the studio now are two of KCUR staffers, Danny Alexander, who is UpToDate's associate producer, and Ron Jones is KCUR's director of community engagement. Ron and Danny, thanks for being here.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
I know I had to twist your arm to bring
you
in here.
I haven't got to share a glass with Ron in a long time.
Yes, it has been. You are still fascinating, Doug.
As you are, man.
So tell us, Danny, Ron, tell us about what you think about this sparkling wine here.
Well, I tend to agree with Doug that when you serve something like this, not only does it set the mood taste-wise, but it also sets the mood, I think, for the entire function event. I mean, you pull something like this out, and this is very bright. It's very clean. Has a wonderful, wonderful finish to it. I really like, and it doesn't overly pucker me up. But boy, you're right about the balance on this. I really do like, and it does. It sets the mood immediately. We're more festive, aren't we? Here
we are.
We are
absolutely. Ron,
I agree. I really enjoy it. It's light. I think it's starting the juices flowing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Could you start with tell me about the other – you had some other suggestions, excuse me, for other types of drinks that will make your mouth salivate. What were the other ones besides wine?
Well, certainly any dry white wine will do the same thing. Things like Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Grigio or Grüneveltliner or dry Riesling and on and on. Really, literally any dry white wine will do the trick. Truthfully, one could say the same about red wine, but it sometimes has other effects as well. Campari and soda is, I think, one of the classic bitter tart sort of drinks that people like to start with. And for a lot of cocktailians these days, the Negroni, you know, the outgrowth of that thing is like now
I can't believe how many we sell
drink.
Negronis now.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is.
What is it?
Eight years ago, we wouldn't have sold any. It, you know, it's got gin in it and Campari
and sweet vermouth.
And sweet vermouth.
I'll have one.
I was going to say, I can see how that would go. Yeah.
So I mean, the wrong thing.
No,
darn it.
There is no such thing as...
As a wise man once told me, there's no such thing as a... Wait. What did Doug say?
There's no such thing as a wrong drink.
As a wrong, bad wine. Right. A good wine is one you like. Chef Habiger, tell us about your thoughts on this wine.
I think it's delicious. It's got, you know, a little bit of like apple and lemon at the same time, you know.
Which is pairing perfectly with this.
I made a soup that's got a sweet potato soup with apple and hazelnuts on top. And I think it's probably going to match up pretty well.
Oh, it matches up really does.
Danny, do tell us.
It's I was kind of curious because I was like, okay, what's on top? And I kind of just reached in and took it. And that sweetness of that apple, but with the underlying I'm sorry, the underlying savory of the soup. It's, I love those kind of matches, those kind of balances, you know, where one kind of counteracts the other. Really, and the texture on it is just, I'm just going to slurp here, excuse me.
Go right ahead. I did the same thing, and I'm talking with my mouthful.
We had an incredible sweet potato year this year. Some of my farmers say they're going to have sweet potatoes till May.
I noticed that we had
so much rain in the summer, you know, and then it stopped, and it's almost like grapes where the juice of the fruit or the vegetable concentrated the flavors, and it's bright orange, these sweet potatoes we're getting. Same thing with the butternut squash. It's really been a great year for that.
Yum. Well, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, where, this is so rude of me.
We're just chewing and slurping our way through the show.
Yep, that's what we do.
If you can't tell, we're talking about food and wine with Doug Frost and with Ted Haberger. If you'd like to join our conversation, we'd love to have you here. Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email your short questions or comments to uptodate@kcur.org. All your wine questions, Thanksgiving food questions, on the table. On the table. Sorry. So this, Doug, when picking a wine for something like this buttered sweet potato soup, should you base it on the sweet potato soup or the apples or the hazelnuts? Hazelnuts are, you know, pretty distinct flavor. What would you pick it based on?
Yes.
All three.
Now, not trying to be a smart ass, but the issue is, I think, really, the simple issue to me, at least, when I try to simplify these things, is to say, what's the weight? What's the weight like? And this is not a super heavy soup by any means. It's kind of, you know, medium-bodied. And so I'm looking for wines that aren't super heavy. I'm looking for wines that are kind of medium-bodied or have a medium amount of intensity. And other than that, I just let the whole thing go because I think it's there are just too many other little variables for people to worry about. Once we in the industry find a really lovely match, we'll sit around and argue until the bottles are empty as to why, you know. And somebody will always be there going, this you know, would be much better off with a Roussanne, you know.
But will you ever, like, find one note in a dish, like in this dish, maybe the apple, and then look to accentuate that with a wine selection?
There's a whole school of thought about that, and some really smart chefs, and mostly chefs, who've promoted that idea. They call it flavor bridging.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to be a hater, but I'm a hater. You know, it's like I think that's a terrible way to go about the process of matching food and wine, because the last thing I need is more of the flavor that's already in the dish.
Mm-hmm.
It's contrast that makes things interesting.
I agree.
It is that. One of the human traits is this notion of adaptation. And adaptation shuts down flavor, essentially aroma, once it becomes very intense so that we can smell other things. And so if you keep having the same flavor over and over and over again, it becomes less intense with every bite. And so to some degree, drink exists if only for that purpose, to break that flavor, to give you a contrast so that when you go back to that bite of food, you go, oh, my God, because there's nothing like that first bite. That first bite is the bite, you know, typically that's the most intense a flavor you'll ever get from the dish. And so to have the same, quote unquote, flavors mirrored in the wine seems to me at least intellectually lazy. And I would say from a physiological standpoint, doesn't really get the job done.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also tweet your comments to us at KCUR Up to Date. Well, here's a question I've wondered about for the past few minutes. We, at least I think of wine as not an afterthought, but as secondary to the food. You pick the food and then you find the wine. Should we be perhaps doing it the other way around? Choose the wine and say, okay, what food would go well with this?
Well, no.
I know it's a little bit more difficult, but
I come from the restaurant business. I have been in restaurants since I was 15 years old. And wine, from a restaurateur standpoint, and I know Ted will smile at this, wine is a condiment for food. It is not the other way around. You know, as a sommelier in a restaurant, my purpose was to make Chef Debbie Gold and Chef Michael Smith's food more impressive. It was not to steal the limelight from them. And I feel in the home, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. And there's a lot of times when people go, I just have this really great bottle of wine. I really want to show it off. And most of the time when you're going to do that, have some really, like, you know, plain food. Have food that doesn't detract from it. Have hamburgers. You know, hamburgers aren't going to detract from it, generally speaking.
Unless you overpower with condiments.
Unless you overpower with condiments, exactly.
So, the correct cheese selection on your cheeseburger.
Well, there you go. That's true, too. But I think the issue for me is that wine is a beverage that I, as I choose the wine, I choose it based on what the food is, not the other way around. And I think most people are the same way, that they go to the, you know, the store and they buy some salmon and they think, wow, this salmon looks great. Oh, I wonder how I'm going to cook it. And once they're done with it, they go, ooh, and now what do I drink with that? Anything will do. You know, light red wine, light white wine, powerful white wine. You'll be fine. Sparkling wine with everything.
Why not? We're talking about food and wine for Thanksgiving. If you'd like to call us and let us know what you're serving with your Thanksgiving meal, we'd love to hear. 816-235-2888. Well, we've talked about appetizers and wine, and we've talked about perhaps the main course in wine. But when it comes around to dessert time, you know, I, by the time I get to dessert, I'm kind of full and I want something light and refreshing, like water. But obviously that's not wine. What do you suggest for desserts? I mean, especially at the end of a huge Thanksgiving meal where after, you know, seconds, sometimes in thirds on occasion, people are really full.
We're going to have we're going to look at a dessert wine. So I have strong feelings that the wines of the middle part of the country are particularly ideal when it comes to dessert time.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about that a little bit, but I think the simple rule, and I hate rules because they're meant to be broken as far as I'm concerned. I've lived my life doing that since I was a kid. But the issue for me is if there's a rule, it's if you're going to have something sweet, make sure the wine is as sweet or sweeter than the food, because otherwise the wine comes up sort of thin and tart. But once again, there's so many different palates out there, so many different preferences out there, that it's sort of silly to say, you should drink this with that. I that's the part that makes me crazy, that anybody in my profession ever tells people, drink this with that.
Beer, not unheard of on Thanksgiving. In fact, I think you're a huge fan of beer on Thanksgiving. And with so many good choices in Kansas City, many of them courtesy of Boulevard, there have to be some good pairings. Do you have a favorite?
Oh my gosh.
And magically, he pulls a bottle of beer out of the cooler.
Bottle of Bob's. We're having a little Bob's 47 here. You know, one of the great beers from Boulevard, one of the great breweries of the country.
Did I hear something about Bob's 47 going away, or is it just becoming a seasonal brew or something?
Oh, God, I hope not. Yeah, I think there would be riots in the streets.
I heard something. I don't want to spread any false rumors, so maybe I'm absolutely wrong. I hope I'm absolutely wrong.
Yeah, there's going to be a run on Bob's at every
Well, there is always a run on Bob's. You know, it is definitely a seasonal thing, and so it's not around all the time, and that's part of what is so cool about beer, that beer reflects seasons, that beer is supposed to at least reflect, you know, something of time like many of these other drinks do as well. We're having this little sandwich that Ted has come up with, and
Ted,
I thought Bob's 47 would be the way to go.
This looks
you're right.
Awesome. What is this sandwich that you've been preparing for
this
us?
This is a braised pork belly sandwich with a Brussels sprout slaw. And this pork belly, I brined it overnight and then cooked it for about 6 hours in its own fat. Sorry about that, everybody. And
so, kind of like doing a confit.
Yeah, pretty much exactly. It's really pork belly confit, and then pressed it overnight to kind of squeeze out any excess fat, and then seared it and roasted it in the oven before I got it over here and tried to keep it warm, and I think I did it.
Yum.
Oh yes, you did. Yes,
well, I want
did.
You all to talk about this and the Bob's 47 pairing while I take a bite of this, please.
Exactly.
The slaw, I think, is an inspired idea. And you always do wonderful things with vegetables.
Thank you.
So tell me again what goes into the slaw.
The slaw is actually only got three ingredients besides salt and pepper. It's got Brussels sprouts that I've shaved just with a knife, and then shallots and some sage. And that's it. And I just sautéed everything together and kind of broke it down a little bit.
How do you shave a Brussels sprout?
without using cream, right?
With a razor.
Small razor.
I just used my knife and basically cut the Brussels sprout in half.
You didn't need Oompa Loompas to get it done or anything?
No. Okay, sir. Instead of using like a mandolin or anything, I just used my semi-professional knife skills.
And then just combined with the...
Yeah, and then got a saute pan hot with olive oil.
Okay.
And then put the Brussels sprouts in there, and then the shallots, and then the sage.
Oh. Nicely done.
Thanks.
Yeah, and what about with Bob's? Oh, you don't have any yet.
I don't have
to get
any.
Some Bob's over here.
Hold on.
Bob's. There it is. I think I'm just going to – I know I'm not supposed to talk about this. It's supposed to be Danny and Ron and everyone else.
You're the expert here, aren't
well,
you?
Well, no. We're all experts. Wait a minute. We're all experts okay. in food. You know, we really are. Yeah. We've been eating and drinking our entire lives. We know exactly what we like. There are no universal palates out there that decide, you know, our best palates or any of that sort of nonsense. But the maltiness of the Bob's, this, you know – slight note of honey and the malted cereal almost tastes like, you know, Honey Nut Cheerios.
And it stands up to something that's as flavorful as this, which is what I like. And this
I'm
is a great
really
combo. I
mean,
this
digging
is,
this combo.
I know. I'm like thinking, I'm going, wow, this should be a slider at every bar in town with this combination. Yeah, I'll have a Bob's and one of Ted's sliders. Let me have that.
Yeah, I'm actually tomorrow on Thanksgiving. It's my wife's birthday. And so I've got two birds to kill here, basically.
Ah.
And so I'm doing two dinners. I'm doing a lunch, and then I'm doing a dinner. And the lunch is going to be these sandwiches, these pork belly sandwiches, and then smoked turkey sandwiches. And then at dinner, we're going to have roast duck and some other things like that.
Do you ever stop cooking?
Not really. I really, really love cooking. It's when I'm not cooking is when I get depressed.
Well, I was going to ask you, when you go to a restaurant, so you're on vacation, sure. let's say, whatever that is, and you're at a restaurant, how do you feel like the urge to go back into the kitchen and start working or just look around and talk
well,
with the chef?
Absolutely.
Can you be a customer?
I can be a customer, but I love the process of watching different people cook, and you get so many ideas. You know, I mean, it's kind of like if an artist only painted in a closed room and never went out in the world, you know, their art wouldn't be very good. And so learning, getting ideas from other people and eating out, I think it's very important. And, of course, I love to see kitchen equipment. I love to talk to chefs about their process and you know, I can be both.
That's almost like food porn or something.
It is. It is.
Oh, but are you also critiquing while you eat
well,
others?
Sure. You know, and I, you know, this is something that I'm sure our customers do on a subconscious level. But for me, when I go out to eat, usually while I'm eating, everything's great. And on my way home, I start to analyze what I've had. And by the next day, I've really analyzed it. And usually a meal will go downhill for me. As the days progress in my head, with rare exceptions, and those are the ones that I know that are really, really good. You know, and there was a dinner that I had from the American with Debbie Gold for my wife and my anniversary a few years back, and still to this day I think about that meal and what a tremendous, tremendous experience it was. And I think everyone should have those experiences.
Can we get a round of applause for Doug Frost, who just pulled a broken cork out of a bottle of wine?
Woohoo! He's an expert.
The problem here is I broke the cork.
Oopsie.
All is not lost.
That's not an uncommon occurrence. What's your advice for what happens when you break a cork?
Well,
depending on where it breaks.
Yeah, the first thing is don't be lazy like me. Drive the auger all the way into the cork so it disappears. And don't get in a hurry and as I was trying to do. And the cork may have dried out a little bit, but the issue is most of the time, if you just take your time, you know, take out what is broken and then gently use a good screw, a good cork screw. Mm-hmm. If they have Teflon coating to the auger itself, that's really great. And I'll usually, when I'm trying to get the last part of that cork out, I'll usually drive in at an angle and then try to very gently pull it out because you might just pull it apart if you're not careful.
I have found that a tea strainer, if you have to, as you pour the wine, if you don't get all the cork out, is just pour it through a tea strainer.
Actually, I was going to say that's, you know, instead of worrying about all is lost, just jam the cork through there, get yourself a tea strainer or any kind of a strainer and just pour it through and the wine will be fine. It's just, you know, the cork's been touching the wine all along. A little bit of cork in there isn't going to hurt. Teeth filter things really well.
And no difference if it's a synthetic cork or a real cork or a...
No, a synthetic won't break up on you. The only problem with synthetics is they can be very hard, you know, hard as a rock, so they're kind of harder to get out. So there are these corkscrews like the one I have here that are hinged, so you can kind of pry it loose, and those can be really, really handy.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 if you have questions about food or wine. Actually, you know, it could be Thanksgiving. It could be other wine or food. Give us a call. Let's say hi to Carl in Bayshore, Kansas. Carl, welcome to the program.
Well, I've really enjoyed listening to you talk about all these delicious foods, and, of course, it makes you hungry just listening. I have a question and then maybe a comment about one thing we've done over the Thanksgiving holidays. First, you talk a lot about wine in combination with your foods. What suggestion do you have for those who want something similar but without the alcohol? And then, just as a comment, one of the things we have as a tradition is to go out on the farm after Thanksgiving, usually the day or two after, and do a Dutch oven meal over a fire.
Man.
And that, you know, no matter what you cook, when it's outside and it's cold and kind of enjoying the fresh air in the fall, it's really, really good.
I'm curious, do you do pork, or when you're doing the Dutch oven, what kind of meat do you do?
Either chicken or beef.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Sometimes do a stew or chicken with potatoes and onions. It's just really good in the Dutch oven.
Mm. Carl, you bring up a really good point, which is that outdoor feeling where clean air and your sense of smell is heightened. And I love walking back, you know, cooking after a couple hours, walking out of the house and walking back in the house just to smell what I'm making. Carl, what a great call. And Carl's got some questions about what non-alcoholic beverages work well with Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, well, you know, anything at all, as I certainly try to say. But there are, especially this time of year and throughout any of the growing season, there's so many fresh juices out there. And fresh juice with sparkling water is like better than most wine. Shot myself in the head with that one?
No,
but
no,
it's
no,
really
no.
true. You know, that sparkling water and fresh juice mixed together are just as good as any wine could ever hope to be.
A good spritzer.
Yeah, exactly. And you get the flavor from whatever fruit you're pulling from. And a little bit of sugar from that, and then the bubbles create a sensation of dryness, so the drink can be very balanced, and it's a great way to go.
Well, I'll tell you what, thank you very much for the call, Carl. Let's take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Thanksgiving food and maybe some ways to make those traditional but tired dishes a bit more exciting. I'm Stephen Steigman in for Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Stephen Steigman. If you missed yesterday's history of the meat industry in America, or our visit with the founder of StoryCorps, you can find those and Motley Crue on the fans notes at kcur.org. Up to Date is off for the next couple of days, but tune in tomorrow at 11 for Burn, an energy journal, and its report on rising sea levels. And on Friday at 11, we'll bring you a special called Mexico Uncovered. We're talking this hour about Thanksgiving food and wine in our studios. Doug Frost, one of three people in the world to have the dual designation Master Sommelier and Master of Wine, and Chef Ted Habiger of Room 39. Gentlemen, before the break, we were talking about some non-alcoholic drinks. We were talking about beer, and we were mentioning a red wine coming up. And in front of us is a beautiful red wine. Doug, why don't you tell us what it is?
Sure, absolutely. This is Rodney Strong's Pinot Noir Reserve 2008. It's from Russian River Valley, which is a relatively cool portion of Sonoma, or at least relatively accessible to the Pacific coast. So you get a lot of cooling influence from there. I should say that just before that, we had that semi-dry Riesling that we toyed around with the sweet potato soup and the apples and the hazelnuts and everything. And that was from Dr. Constantine Franck from Finger Lakes in New York. And I think Riesling is I'm nuts about the grape.
You're a fan of Riesling.
I drink a lot of it, you know, and that's just me. That ain't you know, instructions to the rest of the world. But I like the interplay that often but not always happens between incipient sweetness and very strong, often tartness. But I think in general, the West Coast struggles with Riesling in a way that Finger Lakes and maybe even Michigan doesn't, does extremely well with it. So Dr. Franck is one of the pioneers all the way back in the 50s with these kinds of wines in the Finger Lakes. So love that stuff. And then the Rodney Strong, typically a house known more for, let's say, Sauvignon Blanc or maybe even Chardonnay or certainly even Cabernet. But pretty good Pinot Noir. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
And I like Pinot Noir. I like to show Pinot Noir when we're talking about Thanksgiving dinner. Once again, we go back to this turkey. Turkey being a relatively bland protein. So I need a wine that isn't going to try to overpower it. And I think of things like Rhone Valley wines and, you know, some Central Italian wines and maybe some Northern Spanish wines like a wine called Bierzo, but I often just think of Pinot Noir.
Mm. So do tell us, Ron Jones, Danny Alexander, tell us what you think about this wine.
I think it's great.
On what grounds? No, I'm kidding. As we have to say, defend your argument. And I agree. Well, yeah. What did you find that you liked about it?
Well, first off, I love the bouquet. You know, it smells great. And, you know, I think it's I'm by no means a wine expert, so I don't know the lingo that well, but it has body.
Has some weight. You can
feel has some weight, right.
But not oppressively so.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
I like. What's the? There's a certain note in that in the bouquet of this in the nose, and I'm trying. And I always am bad at this identifying. There's a certain note there. What would you?
Well, if we were tearing the nose apart, I would say it has a little bit of blackberry. It definitely has some black cherry. It has a touch of raspberry to it. Maybe even a little dried strawberry sorts of notes. And then you get into the oak side of things, and the oak side of things shows this little bit of allspice and nutmeg and cardamom. And maybe even a little touch of coffee. All of this is coming from the barrel. The more you toast a barrel and you toast the barrel's wood, the staves, so you can bend it into that famous cylindrical shape, it'll pick up these aromas. And the longer the wine sits in there, the more it will pick up those aromas as well.
Am I sensing, and maybe this is the wrong term, tobacco? I'm smelling some smokiness in this. Is that the toasted wood?
That's a deeper tone in there.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, part of Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir has a slightly savory side. So you take the slight savoriness, which can sometimes present as rosemary or sage or something like that in Pinot Noir, and then you put it inside this barrel, and now all of a sudden it starts to turn into, you know, somebody's cooking it or smoking it. Mm-hmm. And immediately the mind says, well, that reminds me of tobacco. Hmm. So we constantly are making these or attempting to make these connections with what we smell, between what we smell and things that we already know.
No. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Well, speaking of smoke, let's say hi to Ramon from Raytown. Ramon, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hello.
Ramon, are you there with us?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay, great. I'm currently smoking my turkey for tomorrow. And my call to you is to get some recommendations on some wine or beer that would go along with a turkey that is smoked.
Cool. Well, Ted, do you want to start by talking about smoked turkey a little
Sure,
bit?
Sure. It's actually what I'm going to be doing in about an hour and a half. I'm going to be doing the same thing. You know, and I've actually been thinking about this a little bit, and because the smoke adds so much flavor to it, I think you do need a little stronger wine, still one that's not too fruit forward, maybe one that's got more acid in it. And to go back to the Rhone, I would love something from the Northern Rhone with that. I don't think you need to go out and spend $300 on a fancy bottle of Cote Rôti, but you can find some Northern Rhone wines that are pretty predominantly Syrah that would work well with smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah, and I think of it a lot of times what happens there with smoke, there's a certain amount of kind of bitterness to me, sometimes the meat, you know, the sweetness of the meats now seems to be gone and replaced by something that's a little bit bitter. And some people will even talk about metallic notes that come out of smoke and things like that. So I actually tend to go away from wines that are bitter and astringent because I don't want to reinforce that. Instead, I want wines that are soft and lush.
But Zinfandel would probably be great.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
rounded.
Don't worry about the alcohol. You know, a lot of people say, "Oh, the alcohol is too high on that." And it's like, that's really not a problem for me. but that's to say, it is for some people. So so there's, I think, once you start dealing with smoked meats, it's a lot more difficult to find something that's just a natural match. In other words, there is no perfect match. You just put out a couple different wines and let people drink what they like. But that said, immediately smoked turkey, I've played around with Beaujolais Cru, not the standard Beaujolais, but the upper end Beaujolais, and it'll set you back like $20 a bottle, maybe $25
Ooh.
A bottle. But, you know, I mean, sincerely,
a bad investment.
And how many are you going to be able to, I mean, you don't want to buy like five bottles of that because that's a lot of money. So, but a couple of bottles of Beaujolais Cru, they go by names like Morgon or Fleury or Bruy. They're just the upper end of Beaujolais, I think, combines the tartness that you're looking for to try to clean up you know, the intensity of that flavor with the fruitiness that you need to make the wine seem more supple in the face of this.
Speaking of Beaujolais, have you had a chance to taste this year's Beaujolais Nouveau?
Oh, I am so busted. I have not.
Which, I mean, it just came out like last week.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm supposed to – seriously, this is a damning admission that I've just made on it because somebody sent me a bottle and said – and sent me the message, you know, yesterday, have you tried it yet? And I haven't responded because when we're done here – honestly, this is my next, you know, job. When we're done here, I'm going to run back to the office, get that Beaujolais, take it home and taste it. I am so busted. But Beaujolais Nouveau is always fun. It's all, you know, mm-hmm. big piles of fruit, big ooey-gooey fruit, kind of banana fruit even in a red wine. And they're fun wines. They're harvest wines. That's, you know, it's really what it is. It's a harvest party.
816-235-2888. 816-235-2888 is our number. You can also email us, uptodate@kcur.org. Now, Ted, you were just talking about smoking your turkey this afternoon. Is that turkey brined before you smoke it?
Yes, yes. I brined it actually for 2 days.
Wow, really?
Then, yeah, I did. I kind of did a long brine on it. But the reason being is that this was a this particular turkey was not fresh. It was a frozen product. And I have to say, turkey for me on Thanksgiving is not a big deal. You know, I do not go crazy on the turkey, but I always have it just so everyone can have it. And for me, it's more different fowls, you know, squab or duck or something, you know, that I really enjoy.
Something you can catch in the backyard.
Yeah. Right? I have had some possum. I have chickens in my backyard, and the possums think that's really cool. But what my whole purpose of this was because I had this product that was semi-frozen. I put it in the brine in the refrigerator for an extra day just so I could get, you know, so that brine could work its magic since it was already.
Well, I know you're a big fan of brine. I saw a recipe from the American restaurant's Michael Corvino for a roast turkey with aromatic salt cure and natural juice. Have you ever made a turkey without brining it?
Sure, absolutely. A lot of the times, I think back to my days at Cafe Allegro, and we used to do this kind of Cajun spiced turkey breast that we would do for sandwiches all the time. And it was a product that was more like a dry cure instead of a wet cure, which is what a brine is. And so we would be imparting those flavors in a dry state, you know, instead of soaking it overnight.
Well, what if you want? I mean, you say you make turkey, but what's a good alternative dish to turkey that you like to show off? And, Doug, if you're going to Thanksgiving dinner at somebody's house and you really don't want turkey, what do you want?
We're doing turkey and ham both.
Doing the ham also?
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, so people have alternatives.
I'm such a sucker for duck. And it seems like every year I try to recreate special duck experiences in my life. And I don't think I ever quite get there. And they're new experiences. But there was one moment where I was roasting duck in a really old oven in my apartment by myself in New York City. And my, like, four-year-old nephew came over. He was probably 2.5. And he loved it. He loved the duck. And I've done this at home, too, where I just take a duck breast and start searing it and tell the kids it's bacon, and they and they love it, you know.
What a great idea. Well, you know, Thanksgiving dinner is one of those meals where packaged foods often find their way into dishes. I'm thinking of canned green beans, marshmallows, French fried onions. How much better does a dish taste if you were to use fresh green beans or fry your own onions?
You know, it's 2013. It's not 1950 anymore. So we do have ingredients readily available for people to do this. It is certainly, you know, it's the fallback option to use the cream of mushroom soup or something. But, you know, honestly, it's got so many things in it that you don't need. If you can just spend an extra 5 minutes, you're going to make it better by doing it from
scratch. Is that all it is? Because people are really rushed in the kitchen, it seems.
It is.
Are those who aren't used to working in a kitchen on a daily basis or even a weekly basis, sometimes get overwhelmed by the amount of work to be done on Thanksgiving?
Well, there's nothing wrong with writing a list. You know, I do a lot of things kind of a la minute or at the last minute, and I kind of plan that way and use the moment to inspire me. But I understand people don't live their lives as chefs. So the best thing you could do, I did it on Monday with my wife. We made a list of everything we wanted to serve, and then we broke it down into, is this a lunch, dinner thing, you know? And then we started thinking about it ahead of time. And you can make mushroom soup on Monday, you know, and have it in the refrigerator ready to go, and then use it for the dinner on Thursday. And you can even eat it on Monday night first, you know? I mean, there's lots of ways to do it.
What are some other things you do ahead of time to kind of help you along on Thanksgiving Day?
Right. I'm trying to think. Of course, the brining. I'm going to smoke the turkey today because I want it to rest, and I'm using it for sandwiches. So, and I want the bones to be able to make gravy, so I'm making stock today. And so I can make the gravy tomorrow, and then I kind of break it down into what is absolutely necessary to do the day of. You know, cooking final cooking of some of the meats is important the day of. The cooking of the Gruyere potato gratin that I'm going to do tomorrow is day of material. Mm-hmm. If you do it the day before, it kind of gets too oily. You know, but you can do a lot of little prep items before.
My question was, I think sometimes we get too caught up in having too many side dishes.
Yeah.
To the point.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I always followed, because my mother served it. So, you know, for a long time, I followed her traditional meal. And then I looked at it one year. I'm getting ready to go. And I went, way too many carbohydrates, not enough freshness to it. And so I started like that went. This got replaced by, you know, we never had a green salad on the table. And that became a center point for me. Mm-hmm. So, and I reduced the number of dishes. One, I didn't think we needed to eat all that.
It is a lot like clothing in your closet. You know, you can have lots of bad clothes, or you can have just like two or three good items. And I think if you do that with Thanksgiving and focus on like four good core items that complement each other, I think that's when it really sings.
Mm-hmm. And then you can just open a lot of different bottles.
Wines,
that's where you need the diversity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And enjoy your family, you know?
I mean, that's a really good point to actually enjoy the meal you're having, right? Now, David writes to us at uptodate@kcur.org. It is gratifying to hear Doug Frost appreciate Boulevard's Bob's 47. It is my favorite of Boulevard's efforts, and I wish they made it all the time. Hopefully, DuVille will quash any thought of ending production. So this brings up a good question. What did you think of the purchase, the DuVille purchase of Boulevard?
I think from a business standpoint, it's a masterstroke by John McDonald and company. It's a great a transition of ownership to a great owner who has a proven track record of really understanding quality. There are so many other scenarios that could have happened here. And that's the thing that made me kind of crazy when some of the negatives started coming out is people are like, oh, this is terrible. It's like, wait, the world doesn't just, you know, these things aren't carved in stone. Things move along. And there are so many ways this could have gone bad. And this is absolutely the best thing that could have happened to our, you know, to one of our hometown producers. And I'm so excited for what happens next. I'm so pleased for the staff and everybody at Boulevard. I think that this is, you know, hopefully it presages just more cool things coming out. And I can't believe for a second Bob's is in any danger other than we drink it too fast. You know, it goes away quickly. But they have so many cool beers now these days that I just move from one to the next.
816-235-2888. Let's say hi to Brad in Prairie Village. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Go ahead. Brad, can you hear me? Apparently not. Well, let's put Brad back on hold. Let's say hi to Jim in Kansas City, Missouri. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to listen to you guys talking about fun things for Thanksgiving. I have a comment to make with regard to a wine that will go great with turkey. When you get to be a certain age, you should be drinking wine that tastes like the color of velvet that you are drinking. So Peace Porter Goldtroppen, a dry Riesling, is fabulous with turkey. And if you want to go with a red, do a Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of great kinds out there. But one that I've had at the Capitol Grill is Belle Gloss. Tastes just like Burgundy velvet.
Hmm.
Yeah, those are both fun suggestions. I'm a big German Riesling fanatic. And the town of Peaceport has one of the world's greatest Riesling vineyards there called Goldtrufken, and there are really magic wines that come out of that particular vineyard. And Pinot Noir, as we were discussing earlier with this, with the Rodney Strong that we're having here, is a very friendly turkey wine and virtually friendly to everything that's at the table. Although, you know, some of the sweeter stuff there might clash a little bit with it. And by clash, I mean when you put something sweet with something that's, quote unquote, dry and bitter and dusty and astringent, as red wines typically have a character of being, then it can reinforce some of that bitterness and dustiness. But when you just have turkey and dressing and those sorts of things with Pinot Noir. It's pretty cool.
Hmm. Jim, thank you for your call.
And let's Goldtroppen is a dry Riesling, and there's a guy who has a $2 million budget as a wine steward at the restaurant C in Vancouver. He says it's the best white wine in the world. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call.
You betcha. Well, just to clarify, you can make dry, you can make sweet, you can make ultra sweet, all from the Goldtroppen Vineyard, and you can find all of those styles out of that particular vineyard.
So Chef Ted Habiger in front of us is a beautiful concoction of ice cream and a brittle of some sort. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is a pecan brittle. This is a great recipe that you can probably find this online in the pistachio version from Claudia Fleming at Gramercy Tavern. I love her brittle, and this is one with Missouri pecans. So keeping to the local thing at Missouri pecan brittle. And then the ice cream, which... You know, we don't have a fancy ice cream machine at work or anything. We just use Cuisinart, so this can be done at home. This is a pumpkin pie ice cream, so it's got all the traditional spices of pumpkin pie.
But not overly done.
Yeah, yeah. And some of that great pumpkin also is in there.
While I'm tasting this, I want to take a call. Let's try Brad again from Prairie Village. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Go ahead, Brad.
Hi. You caught me while I was flipping eggnog crepes with the whipped cream and hot homemade apple topping and frying up some Polish sausages.
You're multitasking.
That sounds awesome.
And anyway, on NPR, they were talking about adding wine to the brine while brining a turkey, and they said you pull it out and you got this purple turkey that browns up and...
Yeah, the Manischewitz, yeah.
Amazing, yeah. You deep fry it. What would you suggest?
Oh, that sounds great. I think you could probably use any of those wines that we talked about. Zinfandel, again, is a perfect wine for that.
One of my old mentors, or I don't want to say old, I shouldn't have said that, but one of my mentors in the past is a guy named Dennis Kaniger, who always liked to reduce complicated issues down to something simple. Maybe he just did it for me because I'm a simpleton, but he said, you know, when you're looking for the wine that you want to cook with, why don't you just get the wine with the most color? And it was one of those, I was like, you're
sounds
kidding
like
me,
simple
right?
Simple guide to wine and cooking.
But actually, it works. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, yeah. It really works. So anyway, don't spend a lot of money on the wine that you're cooking with, but definitely make sure it has a lot of intense color.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's a red.
By the way, this is spectacular.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad, for giving me the chance to taste that. Let's take one final call from JP in Olathe. JP, we need to go quickly. We've got limited time here. Go ahead, please.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a former Napa Valley sommelier myself, and as far as the smoked turkey, I would recommend just a nice round Chardonnay or maybe like a Chardonnay Sauvignon Blanc mix, like a Semillon.
Hmm. That sounds like fun too. Absolutely. I think there's virtually no dish out there that you couldn't put one white wine with and one red wine with. And if that sounds crazy,
I would agree.
It's important to understand in the mid-19th century, the great classic with Baron of Beef was a sweet Riesling.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're having a late harvest Vignal with this, which is from Kansas, from Holyfield Winery. But there's some good wines made in Kansas.
It's lovely.
It's great wine.
Cool stuff.
Well, I am sorry we are out of time. Doug Frost is a master sommelier and master of wine. Ted Habiger is co-owner and chef of Room 39. Ted, Doug, thanks and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. We'll post some photos of our in-studio tasting at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We are at KCUR Up to Date. The waves are rising and coastal cities will bear the brunt of this side of climate change. Up to Date is off tomorrow for a holiday, but join us for a special report that gives us a look at climate change from the beaches of southern Florida to the icy shores of Greenland. This is a good time to give some thanks to those who helped us this week. KCUR's Lori Arbor, Bill Anderson, Brian Ellison, Jeremy Bernfeld, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I'm Steven Steigman, and you are up to date.